is the Voice Users Conference for Friday, November something. Everybody knows Dave's laughing because you guys know that my trademark is not remembering the date. I'm talking to you over iBeam on the TalkShoe Bridge, so U-Law, straight U-Law, but we've got a special guest today, and thanks to them, thanks to ZipDX.com, we're going to be doing some HD voice, and they're on their bridge. And before we turn it over to Michael Graves, who's at mgraves.org, if you want to read some of the great things that he's writing about, I just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, hey, phone's ringing. First of all, a very big thank you to the American voters. Thank you very much. Second thing, thanks to OnSIP.com, to E4Strategies.com, and to Digium, of course, for lending their support to this whole effort. We really appreciate it. Lots of interesting things going on and lots of interesting talk going on the mailing list as well, by the way. But we've got a full plate today with our HD voice, Polycom trademark, G722 conference bridge hooked in. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Michael, who's going to give you a little bit of background, and then we'll go from there. David Frankel from ZipDX, who's going to also be here. And I will unmute people. We'll start unmuting people in the TalkShoe bridge a little bit later so you can ask questions and things. Right now, I think it'd be total pandemonium if we unmuted everybody. Also, let me just finally remind you of the IRC channel, which is on freenode.net. If you want to get somebody's attention, we're all watching it, or I will be as soon as I put the microphone down, and that is VoIP-users-conference-freenode.net. Michael Graves, are you with us?
Indeed I am, sir, and thank you for
take it away, please.
The introduction. Well, I am just going to speak a little bit and then sort of get out of the way and let David give us some insight. But I will say that this has been about 6 months in coming for me. About 6 months ago, I was the lucky recipient of a handful of Polycom hard phones, which were what they called HD voice capable. And this really tweaked my interest. And so after I had to give back these samples, after writing about them and using them for about 4 months, I had to lay out some of my hard-earned cash and actually buy a couple for myself. And but then that leaves you to this world of, most of the PSTN is still narrow band, and a lot of people don't understand what the scope of improvement for the telephony experience actually is, or how easy it is to do it in a lot of cases. So by chance, I met with David Frankel, who runs a company called ZipDX, which is a commercial wideband specific conference bridge. And David has a depth of experience at taking things beyond the PSTN. And my enthusiasm stems from the fact that I really believe that we've been hearing a lot of noise about VoIP is dead. And there's an element of truth to that, but I think the promise of VoIP is as yet undelivered. And I think going beyond the PSTN is how we get there. So with that, I would like to introduce David Frankel, who's the CEO of ZipDX, and they are headquartered in San Jose, California. And we've been playing with their conference bridge now for a couple of weeks, trying to get ready for this. And Randy is maybe more expert in the use of conference bridges and their control structures than I am, but this stuff is actually really very good. And so we have about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We have about a dozen people on the wideband bridge. One of those is actually a connection over to the TalkShoe bridge. So that kind of lets you understand what you're listening to. And so, David, how are you?
Well, good morning or good day to all. I am fine today. Wonderful. It's great to see this level of interest in this stuff. Thank you for the nice intro. And what I'm going to do is just, as Michael indicated, I've been hacking away on wideband conferencing for some time. And so I'm going to share with you what I can and then hopefully get into some dialogue. And that's what I'm most excited about here. Pardon our chimes as people come and go from the bridge. So what I thought I'd do is talk a little bit about the background or the history of wideband and narrowband from my perspective, and then specifically what we're doing in terms of conferencing and the bridge, and why we think that's useful, and some of the anecdotes and experience with it to date. Let me just tell you a little bit of history. I'm a telecom entrepreneur and an engineer at heart, and I've long had an interest in voice quality and telephony generally, but voice quality specifically. And a couple of years ago, certainly with all of the business experience I've had, I've been on conference calls quite frequently and have always found it to be a frustrating and less than ideal experience, and thought, you know, this really could be made better. And there are a variety of dimensions to that, but one of them that is most interesting to me is, can we use wideband audio, which I'd seen a little bit in the lab and played with some, and knew was a possibility through VoIP, can we use that to enhance the conferencing experience? So we started ZipDX and set off to do that. I'm just watching, I'm sorry, the discussion here about the chimes, which I apologize for. The conference is settable one way or the other. Unfortunately, it's set right now to be chimes on. It's not easy for us to change it after the conference has started, but something to fix in the future. What we had to do was go out and build, or at least enhance, a bridge so that it would bridge at 16 kilosamples or better per second. Since, as most of you know, the whole PSTN is designed around 8,000 samples a second, and most of the audio bridging that's in place is designed to work that same way. So we set out to do that, and we looked at the codecs that were available to us, and G722 was the codec that seemed to be built into, or be getting built into, the bulk of the business phones. I'll circle back on that. Let me talk a little bit about the background of G7 or of wideband versus narrowband. Again, many of you may know this, when the telephone network started way back in the dark ages, there were a lot of limitations electrically, electronically, in terms of what could be done, microphones, speakers, and so on. Studies were done. It was determined that we could get by only carrying part of the audio frequencies that make up the human voice. So nominally 300 to 3400 hertz is what's built into the system, the PSTN. And studies showed that people could even though that didn't carry the full spectrum of voice, the human brain was good enough at recovering the missing audio that you could comprehend what was being said in conversation. What sort of amazes me is that in the, I guess, approximately the 60s, when the telephone network went digital, there was every opportunity to make things better, but instead people looked backwards and said, well, how digitally can we mimic exactly what we've been doing in the analog world? And so they fixed the sample rate throughout the digital phone network at 8,000 samples per second, which means physically, by Nyquist theorem, that there is no way that you can represent audio frequencies above half that value, or 4,000 hertz. And so this has now been built into all of the digital infrastructure and protocols and so on that are in the PSTN. And without going through some huge hoops, we're sort of stuck with it. And then in addition, we're limited, of course, by the microphones and the speakers that are built into the hundreds of millions or billions of handsets that are installed around the world. So we have that legacy to deal with, but going forward, we see the opportunity to change that. Telephone sets do get changed out over time, and in particular now, business sets are being deployed, VoIP business sets. Most of them are being deployed with enhanced capabilities, codecs. Manufacturers are starting to put better speakers and microphones into their systems. And so if we can get connectivity that takes advantage of that, then we'll be able to enjoy audio that's much better than what we hear on the PSTN. So that's where our bridge comes into play. Part of the, again, the excitement for me in doing this with conferencing is that if you look at the compromises that are imposed by this narrowband limitation. I mean, again, most of you have heard that. If you listen to a radio call-in show, I like to use that as a good example. You have people in the studio. They sound great when somebody calls in on the phone. They have a distinct set of attributes to their audio. They sound like they're on the phone, and that is exactly because of this limitation. And so it is much harder to understand them. A lot of consonants get muffled and blurred together because the distinction between those consonants is only available in the higher frequencies. And as I said, our brains are pretty good at filling in those gaps. But that takes mental energy, essentially some CPU power, some CPU cycles from your brain, and it can lead to misunderstanding and confusion and certainly fatigue. And in particular, when you're on a conference call, it makes a significant difference. I tell people all the time, my brother and I talk on cell phones, and we've been finishing each other's sentences for 40 years, and so we don't have too much trouble conversing. But when you have people with which you're unfamiliar, when you're trying to recognize people's voices, when you have multiple people perhaps talking at the same time, certainly accented speakers, those all are particular challenges on a conference call, and a narrow band constraint makes it even more difficult to do all of those things. So a wideband can be a terrific advantage specifically for conference calling, and that's why we think it's a great way to take advantage of VoIP and really bring a material measurable advantage to people who convert to that environment. So in order to take advantage of that, as I said, you have to have the right connectivity. You have to have the right instrument, and you have to be able to navigate through the dialing schemes in order to get people connected. So what we've discovered is that there are an increasing number of telephone endpoints out there that support this. We at ZipDX work closely with Polycom, and of course they're sort of the first name in conferencing equipment in the office. So we got excited that they were coming out with this year their new triangle phones that do support what they call a Polycom HD voice. So that's the G722 codec, and in some cases other codecs as well, but they've enhanced the speakers and the microphones in those devices to allow them to operate this way. It's interesting, I'll tell you another little anecdote. Polycom had a device that they introduced a number of years ago called the VTX1000, and that actually was their first HD voice device, and it actually did work over the PSTN, does work over the PSTN, and it uses a very novel scheme in order to do that. It's really designed to mate with an identical unit at the other end. So if you have a conference room in San Francisco, a conference room in New York, you can dial from one VTX1000 to another over the PSTN, and if all goes well, they will recognize each other, and they will train a modem, a V34 modem. They'll actually bring up a 14.4 kilobit connection, and then over that connection, they will ship compressed wideband audio. And so you can actually have a point-to-point phone call between two conference rooms in HD over the PSTN that way. These are pretty expensive devices, $1,500, and they in general only work point-to-point. So those are pretty significant constraints for the conferencing situation, where often you want to have a bridge, you want to have more people involved. And what's pretty interesting is that modem connection actually doesn't work very well at all if the call goes over VoIP, because VoIP doesn't support the very stringent timing that's required for the modem to maintain its training. But that was an early implementation of wideband audio for conferencing, and now that Polycom's got that in their native VoIP devices that they introduced earlier this year, that's obviously terrific. I mean, another big player in this is Cisco. Cisco sells an awful lot of office phone systems, and now most of their desk sets that they sell are HD capable, and they have enhanced the handsets and in some cases the speakers and the base devices to be able to support higher quality audio. We've got manufacturers like Snome, Avaya in their 1X series, ShoreTel, a number of these manufacturers now are making wideband available in their sets. So far to date, most cases, those wideband sets and those wideband IP-PBX installations operate as islands. If you're calling somebody in your same company, you'll be able to talk to them in wideband. But if you dial any kind of PSTN number, it's going to go through a PSTN gateway. It's going to be knocked back down to the G711 of the PSTN. And so one of the challenges for us is being able to let people connect via SIP and keep the call in native G722 so that those islands can be broken down and people can enjoy full G722. I'll tell you another interesting, I think it's interesting, anecdote that I've picked up in my travels, and that is somebody was telling me about installing one of these VoIP systems at a company. And, of course, it was G722 capable, and so their internal calls sounded great. And when they dialed outside, they got the usual G711. And the IT department started to get complaints from people saying, hey, every time we dial out, the call sounds bad. And, of course, there wasn't anything that the IT department could do about that because they're stuck with the PSTN. And so the only solution that they could find was to turn off G722 internally. And then there was nothing for people to compare to, and so they stopped complaining. So hopefully we won't continue to see that going forward. We'll get more G722 in use and get more of these islands broken down. I think our conferencing service is one way to do that. We can program office PBXs so that they can recognize that people are trying to dial our conference bridge. And when that happens, they trap the number, and instead of calling over the PSTN, they instead route the call VoIP to us, and then we can maintain wideband connectivity. I think I'll just also mention one other anecdote that I think is interesting about wideband in general. Perceptions of this are I think quite interesting. Most people, when they hear wideband back to back with narrowband, their eyes go wide and they say, "Wow, this is really a huge difference. Makes a big difference." But if you ask most people, How does your normal phone sound? They'll say it sounds fine. They don't know that there's really anything wrong with it. And so this is sort of it's a subconscious thing. As I said earlier, your brain makes up for a lot of things that are all this audio that's missing. What you don't realize necessarily that it's doing that. And many people will find after a lengthy phone call or certainly a lengthy conference call in narrowband that they're tired. It's very fatiguing to do this because your brain power is being sapped. So the anecdote I was going to mention, many, many years ago, I was doing some work with AT&T, and they told me about an experience they had where they had done some early work in wideband audio and were looking at how to use it and decided to apply it perhaps to video calling, which was new at the time. And so they did set up some focus groups, and they had a video calling system that used narrowband audio, and they had another one that used wideband, and they had these focus. They didn't tell the focus groups what the differences were. They just had them use the different systems and then asked them for their experience. And the dominant feedback that they got from the focus groups was that the second system that had the G722 codec in it had a better picture. That's what people said. And it's interesting to me that, and to them, that in people's minds, they weren't conscious that the audio was actually better quality. They just knew they had a better experience. And since it was a video call, they attributed that to the picture quality, even though the pictures in both cases were identical. So I think one thing, to the extent that people on this call have an interest in wideband, we have to be very sensitive that most of the people out there in the world aren't that conscious of it. And in fact, if you look at cell phone use, the mobile phone world, audio quality has been getting actually worse. When we started with analog cell phones, they had a certain level of quality that was somewhat compromised from the PSTN. And now as we've gone digital, they've used more aggressive codecs. They're trying to get the bitrate lower, and the audio has been further compromised. And yet we see people using their cell phones all the time. In fact, I'm often amazed that people will pick up a cell phone to make a call, even though they have a landline, which would offer higher quality, right next to that, available to them. And so most people aren't really aware of the compromises that they're making, and we've got an interesting evangelism challenge to let them know. I think most people, once they've experienced it, do agree that the wideband calling is a better experience, but it's not something that everybody wants to prioritize when they make their telephone system and service selections. So that's another thing to think about. But I think this interest that's growing is terrific. I think that the fact that we're starting to get an installed base of wideband capable endpoints out there is terrific. I say, you know, if you're the only person on your block with a fax machine, there's not a lot that you can do with that. But once we start getting more and more of these endpoints out there, we start to break down these constraints on the islands of wideband, then we're going to see it become more and more useful. So I think that's probably a bit of background from me, and maybe we can open it up to some discussion from there.
Sure. I have a couple questions before we throw it up broadly, though, because I'd like to sort of get some understanding of the codec hierarchy a little bit. And I think it's kind of broadly known that G722, which is what we're using for this, is actually relatively a very old codec. It's been in place since the late 80s or early 90s. Was there some relationship between that and the early sort of evolution of ISDN, which then dovetails into sort of what radio stations were doing for frequency extenders and things like that?
Well, I'll tell you what I know or think I know about codec evolution. So G722 is a pretty old codec, and it was created, well, I can't tell you what it was created for specifically, but it's definitely used in ISDN. So G722 is a 64 kilobit per second codec. That's the same bit rate as G711. But since G722 came along later, it uses some more advanced techniques. It uses ADPCM. It's adaptive, so each sample value is relative to the previous one, and so it's more efficient, and more data can be encoded in less bits. And what that means then is that we can get higher fidelity, we can double the sample rate, and still present that in the 64 kilobit bit stream. When ISDN came along and we had end-to-end digital connections at 64 or 56 kilobits, that was very attractive. And ISDN is used by broadcasters, has been used in order to get higher fidelity connections between remote locations. There are a number of other codecs that are out there in the G722 family. There's G722.1, which is, as I recall, Polycom's Siren codec, which is at a lower bit rate. There is G722.2, which is also a low bit rate but wideband codec, and that codec actually has been adopted by the GSM mobile organization as their standard. It's also called AMR wideband, and so there have been some trials done with that codec in mobile networks, and I'm hopeful that over the next few years we'll see more networks and endpoints, mobile endpoints deployed that use that. So we then have the opportunity to transcode between 722.2 wideband and, for example, 722, in order to bring more people out of these islands and into an interworking environment. And in fact, the Polycom VTX that I mentioned earlier uses the 722.2 codec to do its job. And then there are a variety of others, a number of proprietary codecs out there. Skype, for example, operates in wideband in some cases, and they have a couple of different codecs that they use. They had been using codec from Global IP Sound, which is a commercial company, has a number of proprietary codecs, and now they actually, Skype has their own proprietary wideband codec. Microsoft is deploying their OCS telephony platform, and it has in it Microsoft RTA, which is Microsoft's proprietary wideband codec. Then the cable organization has standardized, I think, with Broadcom on a wideband codec. So there's a number of them out there. None of them, in my experience, are as common as G722 in terms of being built into endpoints. But they're out there, and we can get interoperability or transcoding between them. That's not ideal, but it's still a lot better than being in narrowband. So I think we're going to continue to see more interoperability there.
Okay. Well, that's a good overview. And with that, maybe we should open the floor up a little and invite some questions. How do you suggest I do that? I will just maybe open the whole thing up, or
Before you do that, I'm just glancing at our chat here, and it looks like Carl asked, can anyone validate the use of G722 on ISDN? I mean, it absolutely is used for these broadcast installations. So if you have a radio announcer at a basketball game at the arena, they will install ISDN, and they will install specific endpoint devices that interface with that. They'll make an ISDN call back to the studio, and they will carry the call that way, and the announcer will then have 7 kilohertz audio to the studio.
Yeah, my own experience with that is that I know some people who are voice talent, not unlike Allison of Asterisk fame, and ISDN is still their standard connect methodology for being able to do daily remote promotional, coming up tonight on KHOU TV kind of things. And there are quite a number of these installations, but it's a deep vertical niche at best. Well, on the Zip DX bridge, where there are a few of us, there's this lovely little tool that lets you raise your hand. But since not everybody is on that, I guess we just throw the floor open a little bit. Say a soft clear
People can
all.
raise their hands, by the way, by pressing star one on Zip DX, just so you know, and we'll be able to see that on
Okay.
our
And
screens.
here's the lovely now. What's the difference between a soft clear and a hard clear?
Well, we have in our conference bridge, we have a number of other features. Mike and I are looking at a dashboard that shows us online who's in the call and their status and so on. And we can mute people in such a way that they can unmute themselves, or we can unmute people. We can mute people so that we have to unmute them. And that's the difference between hard and soft.
I see. Okay. So I just did a hard unmute, and we got quite a lot of noise because everybody was forcibly unmuted. So it would then be preference to do a soft clear, is it?
No, it would be a preference to have people just hit star one if they want to talk.
Okay. And the other thing is, are we hearing? We're not hearing anybody from TalkShoe. Are you out there, Zeke?
Yeah, I wanted to let me check if you see if anybody can hear me.
We can hear you on the Zip DX side.
Right. Okay. Well, and I am talking on the TalkShoe side, so I know they can. We'll unmute TalkShoe in just a second. Just wanted to point out something, and I'm sure David, you can answer this, and I think it has to do with the hard and soft mutes. I just unmuted. I'm locally muted on the Polycom, and when I unmuted, when I hit the mute button, the light went out, but it said something like, "We can't unmute you because you're muted at the host." I assume what that means, that is the definition of the difference between the hard and soft mute, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, one of the
Now,
nice things
the
about
reason,
doing
well,
this
the
with
reason I was
Zip.
surprised by that, the reason I was surprised by that is because I did not know that when you unmute yourself locally, apparently something is transmitted over SIP
Oh, well,
that tells the host.
it's not actually. I'm sorry. If you really just press the mute button on your Polycom phone,
Yeah.
I'm a little perplexed by that because it doesn't
Well,
send anything.
maybe it was that Michael was doing something at the same time. That's very odd.
That's
I
very
found that really
possible. Yeah,
strange.
we can take
Okay.
that offline and do that experiment separately, but
Okay.
no, it doesn't.
Why don't we go ahead and I'm going to unmute everybody on TalkShoe, but obviously it'll be have me scrambling to cut whoever's got noise now. So a warning to everybody who thinks they might be noisy to get ready to mute yourself. We'll see if we've got questions or interesting comments from anybody here. Let me make sure I'm muted. Yeah, I'm good. Okay, here we go. We're going to unmute TalkShoe. Please go ahead.
So far, so good.
Well, that got very strange.
Okay.
You sound terrible, Randy, to us.
Clear. Okay, Carl, I've opened you up.
You are muted.
I heard a talk shoe message. Now you're better, Randy.
Oops. Yeah, a little problem.
You are unmuted.
Should be good.
Okay, you're in there twice, Randy. I will unmute you in both instances.
No, I shouldn't be, but is my sound back to normal?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, well, when I unmuted everybody, everything went to hell, so.
Okay.
Yeah, HD Randy, right, indeed. Okay, I'll shut up. No, she's not around. She hasn't come home yet. As soon as she is, I'm going to put her on.
I have a little example something that I can fire up at the channel because I'm in here twice. And what I've got is a little music clip we can stream into the channel, give you some sense of it'll give you an interesting little comparative between the wideband and the narrow band bridges. Now, if this all is working correctly, there might be a tiny bit of echo here. I have two clients going. 1 second.
That was very soothing.
Okay, let me just, because I'm maybe one of the few people that's listening on both bridges other than you guys, big difference between listening on the Polycom headset and listening on my earphones. I've got a pretty decent system here. I've got Sennheiser earphones, and I can listen to good music on it. Over the TalkShoe bridge, though, it sounds good, but not fantastic. But on the handset of the Polycom 650, it sounds very, very nice. Obviously it's not stereo and it's not going to be hi-fi, literally, but it does sound good. I think that was fair use, James, so we don't worry about it. 10-second, it's got to be fair use.
And you have to, there's no question that that wideband is going to do a better job on music. Most of the technologists that are working on phone network stuff are optimizing for voice. So that's just a fact of life, and that's obviously what the bulk of the use is. And certainly when you get into some of these compressive codecs that are trying to get the bandwidth utilization way down, they in particular optimize for characteristics of speech.
And actually, the object is not to listen to music anyway on the phone line.
So, right. That's not an application.
Inconsequential. Just
right.
Kind of an anecdotal test is really what it is. I don't think it would have been that interesting to play a bunch of tones, but we could have done that.
Well, and for music on hold, it's that much nicer when you're waiting for your customer service agent to answer your call. So I'm just trying to set your expectations. Now, one thing that's interesting is there are better codecs out there. Polycom has a Siren 14 and a Siren 22 that extend the audio range up to 14 and 22 kilohertz, respectively. Again, remember, 722 is at 7 kilohertz, and the PSTN G711 is at about 3.5 kilohertz. Those higher quality codecs are going to do a better job at music. They'll do an incrementally better job, obviously, on speech, because there are some aspects of speech that extend even beyond 7 kilohertz. And so some people in the broadcast industry, for example, they want to get everything that they can. But I think we're probably going to see in the telephony world a focus on 7 kilohertz for the time being, just because it gets you probably 90-95% of the benefit that you would get if you even went to higher frequencies.
Okay, well,
David, can you explain? So this is off IRC. Eric is asking the question: if you're looking at the dashboard as a non-host, what you would see?
So, sure, we have this real-time conference dashboard that just shows all of the participants in the call and updates in real time as people come and go. So you know who's on the call, you know who's joining, you know who's leaving. And then it does highlight who's talking. And that's what the pink bars and the red bars show, who's currently speaking or at least injecting audio energy into the conference. The bar goes lighter if someone has only talked recently and is not currently talking, and then it disappears when someone is muted or silent. And then there are other icons on there that indicate if someone has raised their hand, whether someone is muted. We have the ability to let people cast votes. So if we wanted to take a survey, people can press star 2 and then a digit, and that will be reflected as their vote. And we have a number of private conference rooms. People can move into other rooms in the conference. So if you want to have sub-conferences, you can do all that. So all of that is visible on the dashboard to the participants. And then as hosts, we can also control those things. So we can mute people. We can clear votes. We can move people into rooms. All of that can be manipulated from the dashboard. Someone asked what bandwidth is needed for an HD call. So G722 is the same bandwidth as G711. They both run at 64 kilobits per second, and then that gets encapsulated in IP, sent as an RTP packet, and it ends up being about 88 kilobits per second total of IP traffic.
So David, is there any chance? Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, we've talked privately on the conference when we were testing and messing around about some of the tweaks, and I kind of promised that we might be able to talk about this a little bit. You don't have to give any secrets away, but you've investigated this stuff at a pretty deep level to get things running, and your conference bridge has a very low lag. And we talked about problems of packet loss and so on. Anything interesting to share on some of the things you've discovered on that level?
Well,
because you guys have done a lot of research.
Yeah, sure. I try to think of a few things to say. I mean, we have been very involved in interoperability and trying to get things to work as well as we can. Try to test as many devices as we can. Found our set of bugs and problems. One thing that people may find interesting is that there is an ongoing issue. G722 is a standard, and so that's terrific, and it's an ITU standard, so it's been around for quite a while. It's royalty-free, which is one of the reasons you see it built into so many things. So it's pretty stable and solid. However, when G722 is used in VoIP, it has to be carried in an RTP packet, and there are some standards for doing that. And as part of the SIP specifications, you have to indicate the sample rate that you're using. Of course, in order to capture the higher frequencies, we have to operate at a higher sample rate. So G722 is a 16 kilosamples per second codec. But somebody made a mistake when some of the early specs were written, and they listed the sample rate for G722 as 8,000. And so that is codified in the standards, and it specifically says, even though this is wrong, the number we're going to use is 8,000. And so what we found is that some implementers comply with that and they use 8,000, and others say, well, that's not the way it works. It's really 16,000. And so they put 16,000 in there. And so that's been a bit of a problem, is that messes up sequence numbers and the RTP packets, and it messes up the SDP in the SIP protocol and so on, and that can be a bit of a problem. What else can I tell you? I guess just in terms of packet loss and things like that, G722 was invented way before packet telephony, so it doesn't have any knowledge of packet loss or packet loss recovery. But in fact, in our experience, that doesn't tend to be a huge problem. Certainly G722 is not going to be something you'd want to use over a dial-up internet connection. But with the broadband connections that most people have now, it's quite fine, and we don't tend to see a lot of packet loss issues. Some of the other codecs, including some of the proprietary ones, are much better at packet loss recovery, and that's the advantage of some of those. So I guess those are a few tidbits about some of the discoveries.
We have Hank on the wideband bridge with his hand up. He's on a noisy connection. So Hank, I'm going to unmute you so you can ask your question, and then I'll mute you again when it's done. Hank,
thanks.
Are you there?
I'm sorry about all the noise. I have some stuff going on in the apartment below me. They're doing some work, and then I couldn't set my device for my headset because I can't get to the device control on the I-beam, so I'm limited here. I apologize.
Actually,
no problem. We can hear you
sound very
fine.
Good. Yeah.
Thank you. I was wanting. Well, first of all, me being a blind user, I am. You know, I'm mainly. I tend to pick out audio a little bit better, and I have to say I'm quite impressed with the codec, especially when you were playing that music clip. It sounded like I was listening to a FM station. It wasn't like, obviously it wasn't stereo, but it was quite impressive, I have to say, so. I was wanting to know, I'm an end user, and I was wanting to know if there's any phones in the end user market that have this codec, or is it mainly just business?
You know, it's funny you should mention that. Grandstream, who is kind of at the lower end of the business space, makes a few phones that are actually G722 capable, but there's a caveat attached to that. While the phones are capable of the codec, the actual transducers in the phones, that being the speakers and the microphones and whatnot, are simply not up to the task. Consequentially, you don't really realize as much of the benefit of the codec as you might on a higher quality phone. Somebody has noted that if you plug a headset into a Grandstream phone, you have kind of the cheapest possible hard phone solution to a wideband connection.
Okay. Sorry?
Another consideration is that as an end user, if you're the only one that owns one of these phones, and by the way, you can certainly, as Michael points out, Grandstream has probably the cheapest phones out there. You can certainly acquire a phone from Polycom or Snom or any of the others and use it in a residential setting with a broadband connection. But if you're the only person that has that phone, it's not going to do you any good. Because if you then call people on the fixed line network or the mobile network through the PSTN, your connection is going to end up being in G711, and it's not going to sound much better than what you've experienced in the past. So that's part of the reason we tend to focus on businesses where you get groups of people. You get an entire organization that deploys 50 or 500 or 5,000 HD phones, and then they can enjoy the benefit of that. Or if you are an end user and you regularly are communicating with a small set of people, if each of you deploys HD capable phones, then you will and you come up with some sort of dialing plan. You use some service, either dialing point to point, or you use, for example, our bridge for wideband bridging. Then you can enjoy the benefits.
Okay.
But if you're the only one with it in your group, then it's not going to do much for you.
It is worth pointing out also that. I work for a company. We have 12 or 16 different endpoints around the country. And for inter-office calling, we are able to use wideband where we have wideband phones deployed, and we like it a lot. And so for things like staff meetings and stuff, which we do as a conference, it's made life a lot better. But in terms of, you know, SIP registration services and things like that, services like Free World Dial-Up or there's got to be, you know, 50 of them out there, because this is all based around SIP, it's very easy to say, well, you know, I'm going to give my family Grandstream phones and we'll all register Free World Dial-Up accounts for something like that, some free service, and you can in fact pass wideband calls across those simple SIP registrars.
I think another thing that's great for consumers is Skype. Skype uses its own proprietary codec. But you can you can make, you can, your group can download Skype and everybody can get on Skype, and in many cases then you will enjoy wideband audio with those people.
Okay.
Okay, Hank, I will mute you now, and I'm going to visit Mick, who has not had the chance to speak. He's also on the wideband bridge. There, it's not quite as noisy now.
Mick, did you have a question for us?
I'm not sure if you can hear me right now.
Yeah,
sure.
We can.
Yeah, we've unmuted you. Go ahead.
I'm interested. Am I unmuted? I'm unclear. It still shows me muted here.
No, you are unmuted.
You're unmuted.
Okay. I like to work hands-free. I have had some problems with echo on VoIP. If I use a headset, that doesn't look great on a video conference. And I'm wondering if anyone has any suggestions on unobtrusive headsets that work well, therefore both with audio and with video.
I guess I can't tell you that I have.
And I'm not hearing your response right now.
Can you hear us at the moment?
Are you hearing us now? I must say you're actually breaking up a little, Mick. Can you hear
us? Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I don't have any specific recommendations for you headset-wise. My own experience, I've experimented with some newer headsets, some cordless headsets that in some cases look very much like mobile phone headsets that are fairly unobtrusive and just rest on the ear. One thing I have discovered is that even some of the more advanced headsets, still when they interface to telephones, they go through electrical interfaces that limit the audio to narrowband, which is very disappointing. And so maybe to the extent other people have ideas, that can be a discussion point for the group in the future. But you do have to be careful in selecting headsets to find one that is actually wideband capable.
Carl, if you're still listening, I see you on. Was it you who were loving the GN Jabra 9350?
Yeah, can you hear me? I think I was muted.
We can hear you.
You're there now.
Great. Yeah. I have a 9350, and I'm glad you brought it up because. When I had a 9120 before it, which was probably one of the top of the line cordless headsets that had a noise canceling microphone, so it had a directional microphone that had two microphones basically, so anything coming from the direction other than my mouth would get filtered out by a DSP. So it was a wonderful headset, but in fact it was not up to snuff for my Polycom. So I did a lot of research and I found the GN.com 9350E, which also has a noise canceling microphone, and I talked to some pretty high ups at GN trying to figure out whether or not it would it was up to the task, and I think nominally they say that it is. It's kind of a funny headset in the sense that it has two modes of operation. It actually shows up as an audio device on the computer that you plug it into by USB, and then it also has a regular I think it's a RJ9 interface to a headset port on a telephone. And oddly, if you look at the specs, the battery life is actually much, much greater if you're on a regular telephone, if you're using the RJ9 interface rather than USB interface. And so you think, oh well, USB uses power, but no, this is the battery life of the wireless portion, which means that when it's in USB host mode, it actually has an underlying, or contrary to what the texts were saying, I speculate that it has a higher sampling rate, essentially a higher sampling rate on the transport when you're using the USB mode, because it's expecting that there aren't any endpoints, any hardware endpoints with an RJ9 interface that are going to be up to the task of the challenge of a high definition codec. So they essentially downsample the transmission rate, get a longer battery life. And in fact, as this plays out, you know, the sound quality is not nearly as good as my you know, native handset. So I really wanted to love that headset, and I do love that headset just from a user interface perspective and a range and a battery life perspective. But unfortunately, it appears that it is not up, you know, for all intents and purposes, just from a, you know, throw all the technology aside and just say from a, you know, from a subjective user experience, the headset is not as good as one would want it to be in order to be up to the task of a high definition.
I would agree with that. That I have experience with that headset, and it. In fact, I pulled up the spec sheet on it, and they specifically admit that in USB mode, it is 200 hertz to 6.8 kilohertz. So it's a wideband capable device, but in telephony mode, it's limited to 200 to 3.5 kilohertz. And so unfortunately, because of the RJ9 interface and the electronics that they have there, and maybe some of the battery life stuff that you're talking about, it doesn't really support wideband when you're using it as a telephone adjunct.
Here's a question. When you're using it in conjunction with the soft phone by the USB interface, is there really, I mean, I guess my question is more along the lines of whether the audio components on the device are up to task.
In my experience was that the answer is yes. It's at least better. I guess, can I tell you that in wideband mode it is as good as specifically a wideband handset? I don't know for certain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so unfortunate. I just really wanted to love that headset, and instead I just like it.
I can point to a possible alternative, and that I'm not really in love with cordless headsets. I had that 9350, but an earlier variant of it, and I hated it. I set it free via eBay. but Plantronics makes a corded headset which is USB attached, and I believe they call it the personal phone booth. And it's actually two noise occluding earbuds that go in, and one of them has a little boom off it, and it's got a DSP function in the driver that then provides some background noise reduction. I've been meaning to get one to try it, and I'd be interested to know if anybody has any experience with it, because it looks to me like something that might have some possibility.
I need you.
But you say it's not cordless.
No, it's not cordless, and I very much prefer corded headsets just in general. So it was up my alley that way.
You like the corded headsets because the quality tends to be better?
Yeah, exactly. And also, I've never met a Bluetooth headset that was like worth the energy it would take to throw it across the street.
I've never met a Bluetooth device that's worth that.
I changing topics a little bit, I want to respond to something that came up on the chat a few minutes ago, and that was discussion of stereo. And so the codecs themselves that we're talking about don't support stereo, but they can be used in two channels to do stereo. And there's sort of some interesting aspects to that. Again, if we're talking about traditional telephony, the devices that are out there today, of course, we're all used to handsets, which have one microphone and one earpiece. So there's really not, there's not a lot to do in, or not a way to generate a stereo signal or a way to hear a stereo signal. Somebody said, well, you know, get two phones and put a handset on each ear, and you can certainly do that. But the practicalities are you really couldn't take advantage of stereo if it were there, unless we also made some other changes. Now, in the conferencing world specifically, there's been some research work using or generating a stereo output by essentially using the computer to position different conference participants spatially in different places. So you might have, if you got San Francisco and Chicago and New York on the line, maybe San Francisco is in the left channel and New York is in the right channel, and Chicago is in the middle, if you will. And so as those single-sided inputs come into the bridge, it sends a stereo output. It synthesizes a stereo output that positions those speakers. And if you then are wearing a stereo headset and listening to both channels, then your brain will have an easier time identifying speakers, because they'll be positioned in your head or through your ears in different places. So that's a use for stereo in this environment. But from a practical standpoint, actually deploying it, it's a fair amount of work. One, people have to be listening on dual channel or left and right headsets. They have to have that equipment. You have to have the vehicle to transmit the audio that way. You have to have the tool to synthesize the speakers into these locations in the stereo spectrum. And you have to have some way to control or decide that. And so a lot of people aren't really willing to put that much energy into their telephone experience to get that level of enhancement. But there has been some work done there.
I think that what we'll see looking into the future is that you see that telepresence is becoming a big thing or a bigger thing. And desktop video conferencing is growing a little bit where it's kind of languished for a while. Within the telepresence space, which is a fair investment to be certain, there's going to be probably confluence of the video conferencing and some sound localization that's going to go beyond probably what we now think of as home theater surround sound and start dealing with multi-point localization of sources within a sound field. And this all goes back to things I've been following since the quad systems from the early 70s. So there are people working on it, but the commercial availability of it is nil at the moment. Now, Randy's wife has come in. Yeah.
Is this our cue?
It is. And shall I open up your other line there?
Okay, before you do, I just wanted to give a few seconds of audio. This is a low-end Plantronics headset. It's monaural too. My sound to me is very, the sound I'm getting on the headphone is fine. I don't know what the microphone sounds like. And I don't
it's
know.
It's got some hum in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes there is hum on these things. They're very, as you all know, Polycom wants you to use like a $200 headset, which I don't have the need of. So the hum is, I think, a little taxing the power supply too much. But I will mute myself. Evelyn, are you with us? Okay, can you unmute her and we'll get her into the conversation for just a moment?
She is unmuted now.
And she is on the S675IP, which is the Siemens phone. Michael, you said that they're considering commercializing this in the United States. Anyway, my dear, Carl Fife wants to know what we're having for dinner.
Oh, well, I'm really thrilled to share our menu with everybody. So, hi, guys. I'm the frivolous end of the conference, if I understood well. Yeah, we should have garlic chicken with some very dry white wine. And we're going to have also chocolate dessert.
Oh my gosh.
So, if you want to join us, feel free to do so.
I'll get on if the Concorde were still flying.
Maybe
make it. I think it's great to have you on the call. And one of the things for people to note on the wideband bridge is that, of course, with a woman's voice, there's even more high frequency components, and so it's even nicer to listen to her in wideband because we get the full richness and character of her voice and with this codec.
Thank you.
Not
so can I go back to my
smell
kitchen?
Get in the kitchen now.
Okay, well, I'm going to read a little before I get to work, okay?
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
One question for you, David. Cell phone, mobile carriers. Do you think they're going to be a great distance in time before they pick up on any kind of wideband capability?
Well, that's a great question. I mentioned in passing G722 AMR wideband, G722.2, I'm sorry, which is AMR, also known as AMR wideband, and it's been standardized by the GSM group. And there have been some tests done, field tests, where mobile operators have upgraded their networks and so forth. And the reports came back. If you look at the press reports from that, it's quite favorable. People definitely report that it sounds better. So I'm quite hopeful. I think there are two sort of issues. One is that the population in general is not demanding this. They're not clamoring for it. They're not insisting on it. They're not indicating any willingness to pay for it. So I think the carriers and the device makers, when they think about what enhancements to make, you know, they're always looking at what is going to be a business opportunity for them. And I don't think they're convinced yet that this is absolutely the way to make more money. The other consideration is that they, although we were explaining, for example, that 722 doesn't use any more bandwidth than 711, and certainly 722.2 is a compressive codec and it's fairly stingy on bandwidth, but there's always a trade-off between audio quality and bandwidth. And for the cellular operators that face spectrum constraints, they have to ask whether they should use their spectrum for more capacity, more simultaneous calls, or for transmitting data, for example, or should they allocate that spectrum to higher quality audio. And it just gets back to a business case and whether they can get some economic benefit out of offering a wideband capable connection. I think as we get more landline or wireline endpoints that can do 722 or can do wideband in some form, then the mobile carriers will be more incented to have the ability to connect their customers in wideband to those bridges. There will be more demand, or at least there will be more perceived benefit. And whether it ends up being something that they charge extra for, or it's something that they convince themselves reduces churn, makes it easier to retain customers, lets them put them on plans that are more economically attractive to them, that's what will end up driving that. But I think the technology will continue to get nudged forward over the next maybe 3 years.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, certainly Zeke points out that we should remind folks of the wideband demo that you have available via CPURI on your own website, which is wbdemo@conf.zipdx.com. I have pointed at least a dozen people there who have all came back and said, wow. In fact, if you follow Twitter at all, there's probably been a half a dozen people in the last 2 hours who have tweeted that they've been listening to that as they were getting ready for the conference and came back and said that it's a market demonstration of the technology.
Yeah, that demo does allow you to hit the pound key and switch between the two, and there's some it's a radio, I think it's a recording of a radio show or something, so you are hearing some music, and it's very easy to it's a very good test of the technology, so that's worth doing. wbdemo@conf.zipdx.com. I assume that if anybody wants to know more about all of this, of course, they can just go to zipdx.com. I'm going to open up the questions, but first, David, what phone are you speaking on, actually? Because your audio is just superb.
So I am talking to you at the moment on my Polycom IP670. I'm using the handset on that phone. I have in front of me a zillion other devices. I can go in here and probably dial in on something else just for fun. Let's punch in here. You have no
scheduled comp. Please enter your David, I'd be interested in hearing how you sound on a Polycom IP7000.
Well, if I could type, I'd do okay.
I can hear. I was going through that earlier today. You are not a member of this conference. Ostracism. Ostracism.wave.
So now I'm on my Polycom IP7000.
I see. And that's using G722.
Speakerphone.
Not the siren codec.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
That's correct. So this is still G722. It's just a tabletop speakerphone instead of the desktop set. Yeah. And this is the higher end of their line. There's also a 6000. I'm sitting right next to it, but if I get up here and move around, so now I'm probably...
For a speakerphone, I have to say, that's quite impressive.
I'm 8 feet away from the thing. And it's really very good. It has great echo cancellation in it. It has great automatic gain control. Now there's some noise being generated outside that you may or may not be able to hear.
How does the siren codec, what does that do for it? I mean, how much better is it to use the siren codec? Because that's a relatively new codec. I know 722 is pretty old and comparatively technologically not very advanced, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing was, so there's Siren 7 and there's Siren 14, and then there's Siren 22. And so I think the biggest differences are it's just going to extend the frequency range up higher. And my feeling is that for voice, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
I see.
That, you know, when you get to when you're getting audio frequencies up at 7 kilohertz, you know, you're getting most of what's there. Going to 14, I think side by side, if we went back and forth like our demo does on the phone that we were just referencing, you know, you can distinguish that a little bit. But if you didn't have them back to back, I'm not sure that you could tell a difference. If you walked,
it's not
into
a killer app. In other words, like
right,
people will buy hardware for G722, but they won't buy hardware to switch to some of these other higher definition codecs.
Right, and of course the difficulty also is just interoperability, and if you're the only one with a 22 kilohertz codec, that's not going to do you a lot of good. So I think that in these very high end, someone mentioned the telepresence systems, you know, it doesn't actually, in the scheme of those systems, which can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to install in a room, making the audio incrementally better for another few thousand dollars may make some sense, as Michael indicated. I think you know, you've got surround sound for your video system, and it may make sense to have it in those environments. But I don't see it as being a big deal for sort of the traditional telephony. I hope we're going to take this step from wideband, or from narrowband to wideband, from 3.5 to 7 kilohertz, and that'll be such a big boost that that'll be a landing spot for some period of time.
So here's a question for most of the businesses who are going to be interested in high definition voice are probably going to have the IP7000. And so if they do, and they're making, you know, they're generally going to be doing the same conferences over and over to people who have known hardware. So my question is, if you already have the hardware, can you, or does anybody provide bridging in using the higher frequency siren codecs?
To my knowledge today, no. And in fact, this is a topic that I've talked to my friends at Polycom about, and they've challenged me, you know, when is ZipDX going to support these higher frequency, higher sample rate codecs? And my answer is we're happy to do that at some point. It's work to make that happen. And we have a laundry list of things to work on, and so we're going to work on things sort of in the order in which they think they have relevance to our customers. And so it's somewhere down on the list right now.
I see.
You know, there probably is an evolutionary aspect to some of this. We all know that PBX systems historically have about 1 billion features, many of which never get touched. But they're there for marketing and sales purposes. You know, if you have to go through the whole tick list of features, or you're just not competitive. Well, I think wideband audio is one of those things where if we look at companies like Audio Codes, who just introduced a line of phones that are wideband capable from the get-go, I think it's going to be one of those things that just sort of, it's going to have to be there in a lot of cases as people are doing new deployments. And so it'll trickle out into the marketplace, even though people maybe aren't asking for it specifically, but it'll just be one of the competitive differentiations.
This is Carl again, just to chime in on that. I suspect that what would happen is that right now, I think the biggest limitation to making a high definition call is expressed itself to some degree in the setup of this call, is there's not really a simple way to do it. You can't just dial a phone number unless you're cross-referencing your phone number with an enum database, which of course the official enum database doesn't exist. And, you know, there's just not enough. There's just not a namespace that you can use to specify another endpoint that's widely supported. But, you know, one of these days it's going to happen. And when that happens and you can do pure IP to IP, I think the market will explode with different choices, different codecs. I think that it'll be unlikely that your HD voice or, you know, broad wideband codec supporting endpoints will be, you know, limited to any specific codec. They'll probably all be software codecs that you can just download, because that new one that for whatever reason is the one that people want is, you know, it's, in other words, the limitation right now, it seems to me that it's not the codec per se or the technology. It's just there's not a namespace that you can easily use to reach someone else. And once that happens, I think it will explode. Stereo, quadraphonic, Google Phonic. as Steve Martin said.
I agree with you. I think that this whole point you raised of ease of dialing is just critical, and it's too bad that we've failed so miserably with E.164, or Enum rather, to come up with a dialing plan and a dialing scheme. And so we've got all these islands out there, and even though now we're deploying more and more wideband capable endpoints, they can't get to each other. And calling, you know, cubicle to cubicle in wideband is really not a big deal. There's not a lot of benefit to that. I'd like to be able to call my colleagues across the country or around the world. And so we've got to figure out how to solve that problem. And I've been talking to some of the different providers of IP, VoIP peering functionality to see what we can do in terms of a lookup database. And again, one of the issues when I talk to network operators is that today this isn't there's not enough customer demand to go make this happen. You don't have people pounding the table saying, I insist on having my calls be able to travel in wideband, or in fact, as we get more video calling going, that's an even richer media stream that you'd love to be able to negotiate end to end. But the only common sort of access mechanism that we have right now are these stupid phone numbers, which put us all back on the PSTN, which puts us down to the lowest common denominator. So we've got to try to figure out how to fix that problem.
Yeah. So the thin end of the wedge, I think, is an enterprise space where you have large entities. Like I know I do some work with ABC Disney, and they have Cisco phones that are wideband capable, and they push a lot of that data across their WAN. And so when they're doing things, you know, within management meetings and stuff, it's an all wideband experience. And it's kind of like an outgrowth of their intercompany conferencing, but it goes to the desktop now. But as soon as they have to, you know, broach that and go to the PSTN, oh, well, there you go.
One more question for David. Are you using any technologies like Freenum or even some of these unofficial Enum trees like enum.org? Is it enum.org? No, it's e164.org, which is the open source Enum, or the kind of community Enum tree. Are people asking for that, or do you have that? Do you, I mean, like, for example, do you have your access numbers resolvable, you know, to the underlying SIP URIs?
Great questions. So we've sort of dabbled in some of those. I would say in general, we are not today participating. I've talked to some of those organizations and continue to have dialogues with them. I think the short answer to your question is no, but happy to do that. Sort of trying to figure out what the grander ecosystem is, and the part of the problem is that there are so many different choices, and it seems that everybody is just in a, well, we're going to wait and see which one, if any of those, comes out as the winner, and then we'll go participate in that. And we, as ZipDX, certainly I'm happy to participate in several. We'd like to do that, and to the extent that we have customers that are participating in one or another of those, we're happy to be on the other end of it.
John Todd in the IRC channel said enum.org is the sort of open Enum tree that you as a, you know, as the self-declared Resborg for your telephone number can call in and validate your own E164 number, which all of our E164 numbers are there. So anyone wants to call any of our numbers can do so via SIP. So I would encourage you to at least put your numbers in enum.org. I think that's a great interim solution.
I mean, I'm going to take that suggestion and pursue it and appreciate it.
Yeah, I have my asterisk dial plan set up so that if somebody dials my E164 numbers via, you know, and does a lookup and comes in via pure SIP and actually, you know, sends me a message to let me know that it actually happened, and it has happened before. So there are people out there who are resolving to SIP URIs.
So this is John. Am I unmuted?
Yes, we hear you.
We can hear you.
All right, great. So yeah, e164.org is a great way to publish numbers that are SIP capable, so that you can use the higher bandwidth codecs, and that's, you know. While I don't have your interface right here in front of me, unfortunately, I'm assuming you do understand SIP URIs as a method to bring people into these conference calls?
Absolutely. In fact, we're bridged to TalkShoe that way, but we can dial out to any SIP URI.
Yeah, the problem is that when people dial a regular E164 number, they don't know whether they're going to get an endpoint which is capable even of doing anything other than just being a dumb phone. And there isn't even a hint that it's capable of doing anything other than being a dumb phone. So E164.org is useful because it contains regular phone numbers and allows you to map those to SIP URIs. But there's some meta issues of trust in what the data in that database is like, which is why enum, the general E164.arpa table, has failed because of the issues of trust and control. So I'd encourage you to take a look at freenum.org, which is something supported by Asterisk and Sur, OpenSur, FreeSwitch, CallWeaver, and a bunch of others that uses an alternate numbering system so that when people dial a number, they are always aware that they are dialing something that is almost certainly going to be a voice over IP endpoint. And take a look at that. It's free.
Yeah,
and,
we've actually reserved, well. We've reserved I think, an identity in that database.
Okay.
So that has happened, although I don't think it's fully turned on. But we'll continue to pursue those because I do think this is a big deal. Another thing that we can do, or that we do, in fact, in our bridge today, so one of the attributes, I wasn't going to spend an inordinate amount of time talking about some of the other things that ZipDX does, but it is a sort of different model for conference calling, and in particular, we try to move away from these codes, and those of you that are participating in the bridge know that you can have an identity on ZipDX, and you can be registered there, and we will even learn your phone numbers, and we will call out to you at conference time instead of insisting that you call us. And if we do that, then we can call out to you. You can specify a SIP URI that we should dial you on, and of course, that call can be on in wideband. So if you have an accessible URI, you can be brought into a conference that way, and we sort of bypass the numbering and PSTN problem.
John was asking if the ZipDX bridge indicates the nature of the connection being wideband or not. Yes, in fact, it does.
And that's for the other participants as well, so that you can look at your conference. And I'm sorry I don't have it that I'm looking at here, but
yeah.
You can see that your other participants are able to hear you in wideband or with video and things like that.
Yes, there's a little icon that indicates it's right beside on the far left. There's an icon that indicates who the admins are or the hosts. Then also right beside that it indicates wideband or narrowband, and then the person's identity. I will be taking a couple of screenshots I've taken of this over the course of this call and doing a post on the Ning site and probably on my blog when we're done, just so people can see kind of what it was. I will say it's been a very responsive GUI, considering the DSL that I'm operating on, and I have two wideband calls passing over it and had actually two others coming in that you guys didn't hear.
And Michael, if you're going to take screenshots, we should do things to light up the board so it's got more interesting icons on it.
Well, actually, I that's why I've taken a variety of them, with people with their hands raised and such like that. So, we could mock something up. Oh, wow. Now, that was weird. It does have this thing where it has like all these little offshoot rooms where people can go into private conferences and then come back into the main conference. It's quite novel. What I was hoping we'd do is get some questions off the TalkShoe bridge, because we've had a lot of interactivity in the wideband stuff, and I think that the interaction between TalkShoe and ZipDX is where we're going to highlight in the recording the wideband versus narrowband. No, we're not hearing you, Randy.
How about now?
Yeah, there you are.
We hear you.
Okay, well, for some reason, I was just about to explain that I changed codec in the middle of the call and called back and kept the TalkShoe connection on because I need that connection in order to otherwise nobody can hear anything on TalkShoe. Let me make sure I'm still there. Yeah, I am. No, it's because everybody is muted, and now that we're at this point in the call, we can go ahead and unmute people in TalkShoe. Except, Rico, what is your name over there? Do you know? You'll have to give me that. If I unmute everybody, it's going to be crazy, I think. Let's see. At any rate, my problem was, okay, that's you. Where am I here? Okay, my problem was, you're unmuted now, my problem was that I did not have 722 enabled, so I enabled it and called back, but apparently there's no audio. And it's kind of, you know, I've got 15 different connections on the same IP here, public IP here, so that may not be obvious for the router or whatever else is going on. Anyway, Derek, go ahead.
I just was, you know, Michael wanted to have some example of talking from the TalkShoe bridge. So I'm dialed in on the TalkShoe bridge. But my one of the things that might be holding this back is I know some of the VoIP providers are using hardware interfaces from companies such as Cisco for their termination. And is that something that would completely hold this back, at least until they had hardware that was capable of?
Yeah, I mean that's a great point. And in fact, I think Michael's done some blogging about this very issue. But if you're using a terminal adapter, so if you're connecting to your VoIP phone service, be it from Vonage or from your cable company or whatever, and they've given you a little device and it has an RJ11 on it, and you plug a regular phone into it, in general, all you're going to get out of all of that is traditional telephony. You're going to be limited
I'm talking about more of a SIP provider that you're tied into, such as you know, Teliax or you know anybody else, where you're connected in on a SIP bridge and or a SIP connection, and they may even be using. I don't think they are particularly, but I know some places do use Cisco hardware to tie your SIP. Client in.
Sure. You're talking about at you know carrier interfaces that are not wideband capable. This is why this earlier press release from Audio Codes that came out this week was so interesting, is that they have embraced wideband. It seems wholeheartedly. I sat in on a as I noted David on a WebEx session that they gave yesterday, and it's scheduled to happen again on the 18th, where they basically defined the rollout of wideband across their entire product range. And where that's valuable is they make session border controllers and the kind of hardware that you see those sorts of providers deploying. And so as they make things like from the chipsets on out to the entire, you know, rack-mounted pieces of gear. So they're in a good place to be able to start rolling out the kind of equipment that would let the Vonages of the world do more. But certainly right now, yeah, there are problems, and it has to be IP to IP for wideband to work.
Well, one of the other things to bear in mind is that these intermediate devices shouldn't have to be particularly wideband aware. I mean, one of the great things about VoIP is that the media stream, when calls are set up ideally, flows directly from one endpoint to the other endpoint. And to the extent that you have something like a session border controller, that really shouldn't be manipulating the audio stream or need to really be media stream aware. What we do see is that some device, I mean, even Asterisk, for example, can do, I forget now what they call it, but native bridging or what have you, where it essentially gets out of the way of the call. And what you'd like to have happen is just through signaling, have one end negotiate the ultimate endpoints, negotiate with each other, figure out what they're capable of, and then start sending the appropriate stream with the right codecs from one to the other. And what I have found is that there are certain proxies in place and other call control platforms that if they see an SDP where they don't understand what's in there, they'll block certain things. Or in an older version of Asterisk, for example, since Asterisk itself didn't support G722, voicemail wasn't G722 capable, and it didn't have smarts to deal with all that, if you tried to initiate a call in 722, it would whack it down to 711, even if your ultimate destination were 722 capable. And now I think in 1.6 they've fixed all that.
Yeah, there was a question on the list earlier today, that the Asterisk users list, about, you know, somebody was inquiring as to whether 1.6 was being used in production circumstances. I didn't follow that there was an answer to that on the mailing list. Would one of the guys from Digium be able to?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Yes, there are plenty of people using 1.6 in production right now.
Excellent.
And what is the answer to the question about the Sons of Asterisk motorcycle jackets, John?
If you're willing to fund it, you know, this could be the effort, Randy.
That was precisely that was the question, was funding. Okay. Well, yeah. We'll work that out next year for Asterisk.
So, interestingly, there's been, for some reason, the moon and stars have come together, and really in the last 3 weeks, I've heard a lot of questions about, or discussions about, wideband codec support and features in Asterisk. People have been approaching me individually and asking about it on a variety of things. G722, people have been asking about other, you know, that's why my Speak Stereo comment made it in there, because there have been people asking about that. Certainly there seems to be a lot of interest. It's, you know, the chicken and the egg, as usual. Who's going to support the wideband codecs? Well, Asterisk has to support it first, and then you'll see it starting to show up in the various edge devices. And that wasn't necessarily the case with G722. Grandstream, as an example, really became one of the first inexpensive devices to support it. And so, I'll be interested to see what happens in the next couple of months with things like the Siren codecs, because they have a little bit better bit rates and sound quality, and seeing more devices support G722. But there's certainly been interest in the last month for some reason in wideband. So I'm pleased to see that happening.
I must say, it's been about 4 months I have been hunting for a G722 capable soft phone that was actually worth using. And this is how David and I actually hooked up initially. It looks like the Qt.com and the underlying Verona library, if a little effort could be put into that, that may give us the basis for an open source soft client. But it's not quite there yet.
I noticed that I had invited Dave Nelson, who's the CEO of TalkShoe, to join us. One of the interesting things would be if TalkShoe would go wideband, because we know we have a lot of people who might have the capability. And the other thing was to talk to David eventually about, if we were able to stream, then we might be able someday to use ZipDX to make this call, assuming that generally we're about 30 people max on the phones. The times that Mark Spencer's been on, it has gone over 100, but I mean, that's pretty rare. And somebody got some serious anti-squelch there too happening. Anyway, I would like to, because we're going kind of along here, let's open up things. Derek and John are unmuted. No one wants to say that they want to be unmuted, but I'm going to try again to unmute everybody. Tell me if the whole thing sounds really bad, but if anyone has a question, please start talking about now when you hear that you're unmuted.
We're unmuted.
Thank you for the echo.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's Tim. I'll check that hypothesis by muting him. Okay, go ahead.
That's better.
Tim can be counted on for echo. Sorry, Tim. Who else is in there?
Using a speakerphone or something?
I'm not sure what he's doing, but there are 19 phone lines connected to the TalkShoe bridge at the moment. So, with Maxime, I think it's Steve Edwards or S. Edwards. I'm not sure if it's Steve. Jim is here. Derek, you're unmuted. Everybody's unmuted. There's somebody from North Carolina. North Carolina, who's there? Say hello.
Hello, this is Michael Sprague from Western North Carolina, Asheville.
Hey. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. This is my first TalkShoe call, and so I was trying to dig up if there's a raise hand keypad entry that, in order for you to know that someone wants unmuted, and I wasn't able to locate that.
Actually, there is one, but you are called in and you're not on the TalkShoe client. And I don't know if there's a key sequence or not, but when you're on TalkShoe, you need to open up their program. It's called the TalkShoe application. And I know there's a thing there that you can click for that. I see Fred's called in, too. Hey, Fred.
Hey there.
Okay, everybody. You know, we need to get you guys in, and we're recording this, and we want to see who sounds like what on the TalkShoe bridge and what it's going to sound like on the other end of the recording.
I'm on normal TalkShoe, but wasn't able to get the HD.
But you sound good. You sound good. As does John, by the way. John, you're just on normal. You're on the TalkShoe bridge, and you sound fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I found, actually, that with the right equipment, even 8 kilohertz sounds acceptable.
Totally.
And surprisingly, when you've got a good codec on the other side, when you, as an example, if you're bridging between G722 and G711, the perception of quality seems to improve. And I don't know why that is. Perhaps somebody else has more answers on it. But I know that I've had one or two calls with some of the engineers at Digium, and they're on a G722 endpoint. And, you know, I swear that even though I'm on G711, the call sounds better or more, it has more depth or something.
So,
no question about that.
Yeah, the, you know, a couple of different things to keep in mind in terms of the what makes defines the quality of a call. The codec is part of it, and then the endpoints themselves, the microphones and the speakers have a lot to do with it. So G711, the old codec, it actually is capable of frequencies down as low as 1 hertz and up to 4,000. We talk about 300 to 3,400 as being the bandpass of the PSTN, but it's not G711 that's imposing that complete limitation. It's other elements in the network. And so to the extent we get rid of some of those, you can end up with a better sounding call than what you might traditionally have with legacy endpoints. So even if you take two Polycom IP650s and you connect them over the PSTN, they sound better. You won't get any frequencies above 4,000 hertz. That's impossible with G711. But the lower end of the call can certainly sound better.
It's worth noting also that you can't reproduce anything as low as 1 or even 10 or even 40 hertz with a transducer the size of a Xenophone.
Right.
Streaming Mimi is saying that when he or she tries to call the demo, it connects with GSM only. That doesn't seem likely to me, but I guess it's good.
Well,
be
we
key.
Don't.
Okay,
I don't.
Thank you.
I don't know if. So we support 711. We'll answer in 711 if we can't negotiate 722. So it's either Mu Law or 722 wideband. We don't do GSM.
Yeah, GSM didn't sound right to me, but you know, whatever.
But we can take that offline or whatever to try to debug that. I don't know what client is. Looks like Qtcom.
He's talking about
case.
Qtcom. Now, yeah. I was not able to get Qtcom working. They claimed to do 722, but I got no audio. Oh, well, actually, I finally did get audio coming in. I could not get it to work going out. And I have to say, I think that they may have problems. This is on the Mac. I think they may have had problems just with the Mac audio system. I didn't try it on Windows. Maybe somebody else did. They could. Michael, did you try the Qtcom on Windows?
Yeah, I have Qtcom running on a laptop. It did work. I got one-way audio that is off the demo. I didn't call anybody to verify getting two-way audio, but it was kind of choppy and broken up. And it, David indicated that it seemed to be suffering the RTP timing trouble that we also see when you go directly between iBeam in G722 and the Polycom phones. You can't actually do it. You get one-way audio coming back. The Polycom will not take the audio stream from the iBeam client, but the bridge actually masks that. And so when you call in with iBeam into the ZipDX bridge and also the Polycom phone, you get audio everywhere you expect. But if you try to go directly between them, you don't. And this goes back to the sort of trouble with the RFCs and variability in the implementation. I did shoot a note to the developers behind Qtcom who acknowledged the trouble and said that, you know, they're kind of looking at it.
Yeah, we've done some work with Qt.com, and we've been in touch with them and identified some specific bugs. I think that is a platform that's not quite ready for prime time yet, but it may get there. I have high
and ironically, David, Qt.com, as I think Michael has said or somebody said before, was open Wango. And Wango, I was a beta tester on Wango something like 3 years ago, and you know, that client, their client has been in development for many years, and at one point they actually had a lot of money behind it. So I don't have the highest expectations for it, but hey, maybe now that it's open source, it'll go somewhere. Maybe that's the answer. Anyway, I do think that we should probably conclude this, the recording of the call. The call can go on as long as you guys want to. I'll go have dinner and you can continue to talk. But in order to end things, just as far as the recording goes, I did want to repeat how people can get in touch with you, David, and your company, which is zipdx.com. They can go to the site. I'm sure there's a contact there and everything. We don't have to get crazy with that. We could, if I can scroll up real quick and find the SIP URI for the demo, and it's WBDemo, wideband demo, at conf.zipdx.com. That's a great demo. So if get on your get on your wideband capable phone and listen to the demo. I mean, that's day or night. You know, you got insomnia at 3 a.m. Give that a call and see what happens. It's worth doing. And I do want to say, because people can't see it, that they really should. And David, you go ahead after this and explain what needs to be done. But people need to experience this in order to see it. If you have a need for a conferencing system, their system really is good. You need to experience the web and the way it calls you and so on. Now, how do they go about that? Do they just go register free and they can test it? Or what exactly is the mechanism? Do they need to contact somebody? How does that work, David?
Well, you can certainly go to our website and sign up for service and put in a credit card and so forth and be off to the races. We're happy to give qualified customers trial accounts so that they can experiment with it. And people are certainly welcome to write to me or use the contacts that are on the website. My email address is dfrankel, D-F-R-A-N-K-E-L, at zipdx.com. So there I was just at a conference last week of conferencing providers, believe it or not. There's lots and lots of fraud in this business, lots of people that try to manipulate conference systems to make international calls and so forth. So we don't put free trials out publicly on the web. And you know, it's pretty cheap to try this thing. It you know, costs a few cents a minute to try it out. So you're welcome to do it on your own, but if you want some sort of a trial account, feel free to contact us.
Okay, David, thanks. Brilliant. Thanks a lot for coming in. It was really great to experience this thing. I'm really happy that I got involved in it. Michael, anything?
No, actually, this has been wonderful. Thank you all.
Yeah, and I thank you for the opportunity, and certainly look forward to hearing from you. And as Randy says, we think we have a great conferencing service, so you're welcome to check it out. And by all means, write, and let's do some business if you'd like. Or if you have ideas, I think a lot of people on this forum are very creative people and very knowledgeable. And again, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts and if we should work or collaborate in some way. I'm an engineer, and I'm excited about stretching the technology limits, so please get in touch.
Okay, once again, I am going to mute everybody while we're going out. Well, I guess I better not mute myself. Everybody's quiet enough, but we are going to go out of the recording. But the conference can continue for quite some time if you still have questions or want to mess around. I don't know who's going to be left, but we'll do it that way. The channel will not close. I'm just going to say goodbye as far as, hey, John, take care. Thanks for joining us. But the conference will continue for a little while, so don't hang up necessarily unless you really want to go away. Well, I still don't know what date it is, but we're in November early. Let's see, the election. I can't figure it out quick enough. But this has been the VoIP Users Conference. Join us every Friday, 12 noon, November 7th. Thank you, Carl. Join us at 12 noon on Fridays for the conference. We have a lot of fun, lots of things going on, lots of things you can learn from and share with people, everything you know. John Todd from Digium, really appreciate him coming by. The guys, the programmers, Russell, Quell, and all those guys. Lots of bass. Oh, that's the bass, the music, yeah. Something needs to be done on that.